Hello and welcome to the Advanced Age Role Playing Gamers podcast. I'm Nathan. I'm your host tonight, and I've got Matt back on the co-host chair. Welcome back, Matt.
Hi, me. How's it going?
Good, good.
Good to be back.
And a returning guest, 3 years in between the last time and this time, Andrew E.C. Gaska. Well, welcome back, Drew. How have you been?
It's great to be back, and I've been very, very busy and tired because of it. But lots of good stuff have come from it. I did want to say something about the advanced age. It's just, you only call it that because 3 years have advanced since the last time I was here. It's not that we're older, even, right?
No. Not at all. Okay. There's nothing advanced about that.
Just to clarify, as you know, my beard is as gray as it is. <Right.
laughs> So 3 years ago, Andrew came on, and we talked a lot about his work on Alien and the Heart of Darkness campaign for Alien. But for those of you who don't know, Andrew is a game writer, an author, worked on graphic novels, a franchise consultant. You've worn many hats, and you've got a new one today. You weren't wearing this hat last time. So this is a fourth or fifth hat that you've got.
The funny thing is, I wore this hat when I went to Disney, and I went to a Shake Shack afterwards, and someone literally thought I was Dave Filoni. I'm like, no. No, just because I'm a dude in a hat, no.
Yeah. Well, I mean, dude in a hat, I mean, you must be famous. but yeah, so... We enjoyed our chat last time so much, and when you reached out and wanted to have another one, it was a no brainer to have you back on. It was it's nice to be able to catch up. So, what have you been up to the past few years?
Well,
where you going?
Had Planet of the Apes been announced yet? No, right?
Planet of the Apes had Carbon Gray had been announced, and I think Terminator had been announced. So we Planet of the Apes is probably the latest thing that I'm familiar with that you've done. So you know, why don't we start off with a brand new thing, Planet of the Apes. Tell us about that.
So I've been a huge Planet of the Apes fan my entire life. I wrote two Planet of the Apes novels. For this, one in 2011, one in 2018. The 2011 novel had been with, so at Fox before Disney, this is really convoluted, before Disney bought Fox, I was contacted by the new franchise director over there in 2015. Okay. Who said, hey, I read your Apes novel and I think you may know the stuff better than us. Do you want to be a consultant? And so, you know, who says no to that? And I told him, how'd you get this number? And I hung up. No.
Right, right. Never called me again.
Right.
I worked there. I worked as a franchise consultant for them for a while. I did most of the Planet of the Apes Bible, which was great because I had already worked all this stuff out for my novels because my novels were very continuity driven, filling in the blanks between movies, explaining things that were kind of discrepancies in movies, but at the same time creating a new story. So I worked at this Bible stuff, and then I worked on the Alien Bible, and that, of course, led to me writing the Alien role-playing game.
Yeah.
So I guess it was 2018, and I had become a development editor.
Mm-hmm.
Doing something like that, I can't remember now. For a company called Lionforge, and they had said to me, "Well, you were able to get Alien for freely. What could you get us? Because they're going to do a gaming department." And I said, "Planet of the Apes," because the first thing that popped in my head. And they said, "Do it." So, based on my reputation, they agreed because Lionforge, great company, had no financial issues or anything like that. They, you know, they were, but they had never done a game comic. So, yeah. You know, they were like, well, we know this guy knows the game stuff. So absolutely. So, and then pandemic hit and it sort of got forgotten over there. My department was closed. I was let go because of the pandemic, not anybody's fault because I continued to work freelance for them after that. because they just had to close the department, but still need to work for it.
Yeah.
And then my second publisher, Mike Kennedy, his company, Magnetic Press, had been purchased by Lionforge. And so they became, subsidiary or something like that. I don't know how it works. But
right.
So Mike called me and said, "Hey, I'm sorry. I heard about you, they're closing your department and everything. I was looking through Lionforge records. Did you know that we have the rights to do a Planet of the Apes role-playing game? And do you know that we also have the rights to the West End game system?" I was like, "Yeah, I got both of those things for the company." And he's like, "Oh, do you want to write it?" I'm like, "Yes." So,
sign me up.
That opened those doors. So the West End game thing. Did you guys play the Star Wars game in the 80s? Or?
So I played it once, but it's one of those things. The West End games Star Wars system has gotten its legs again in the past probably 10 years. Mm-hmm. It will not die. People will just scrounge, find books on eBay, PDFs. It is such a compelling system that people just will, even though other Star Wars systems have been published since then, I've even got quite a few of the Fantasy Flight versions over there, but people keep going back to West End Games. It was such a compelling system. So you got that license, and you built Planet of the Apes off of the West End Games system?
Yeah. When I came over to Lionforge and they said, "Do you want to run the gaming department?" I was like, "Sure. What do we got? What kind of rule system we're using?" They're like, "Well, we don't have anything yet." And I said, "Okay. Well, do we want to have our own? Or do we want to find another one that we can use, like, fifth edition or something like that, right?" Yeah. And they said, "Oh, no, we want to create our own." I said, "Okay, I need a budget and I need 2.5 years of development time." They said, "We want to use someone else's." and I was like, "Okay, well, they're not giving me direct, like, not saying it has to be D&D, it has to be this, they're not saying anything like that." So I was like, "All right, well, man, I love that Star Wars game to death. I wonder where the rights are." And I it took me a while to figure it out. I did a bunch of detective work. The gentleman who used to own it had passed away, and I found his Twitter, and that led me to a relative who led me to the people who were running it. And then after that, every time I met somebody and told them what I did, they're like, "Oh yeah, I could have told you so-and-so did it, owned it." It's like, thanks. Where were you 3 months ago?
Right.
But I'd worked out a deal with them to use the logo and the rules, because there's a slimmed down D6, open the game license
version.
Yeah, we could use the full range of everything. Yeah, I look at that rule system like it's the grandfather of modern game systems, because the whole dice pool thing and the kinetic energy of throwing all that dice across the table and finding the one that wound up in the somehow wound up in the bathroom even though you were nowhere near it. All these games use that sort of template. There are a couple of things I realized though. Because of the way modern gaming goes, I was like, wow, there's some actually clunky things in the West End game system that we never noticed back then, because it was not clunky compared to games back then, right?
Right.
So this is not a slight on the system at all. It's just like, wow, why are we have 15 steps to figure out who's shooting first? Is this a Han Greedo situation, so we created the D6 MV, which is the magnetic variant, okay? And the rules are more streamlined with stuff like that. It makes it so that combat goes like this. And in the places where we've done that, there's a box text that says, "If you're familiar with the old game, this is how it was done. But we did it this way because blah, blah, blah." So because we're being respectful.
Okay. So you changed a few things, and but you all highlighted that when you did. So folks familiar with the older system would be able to identify
sure,
that.
Sure.
Yeah. Besides initiative, are there other big things that you feel you want to mention now that you changed with the system?
No, it was just a bunch of little things like that, where there's no reason why the way we play nowadays this needs to be multiple steps. The other major thing we changed is we changed mechanical and technical. We sort of combined. Those were the main stats. And we made will to give you, mental endurance and stuff.
Okay.
That wasn't there. And we also wanted to, like, if you looked at those old sheets, it's like mechanical had like four different skills, and then like dexterity had 37 skills listed. And it's like, no, we're gonna do 12 skills for each one, and you know, we balanced it all out.
Free League does that a lot. They really balance out the skills matched up to the attributes. I really like that a lot, because otherwise you get people like putting everybody is like the most agile person.
Yeah, exactly. You're not going to get your diversity. We're all a bunch of fighters. You know, there's not a single page here. You know, you're not going to get that.
Yeah.
So it was about a balance issue, pretty much. Yeah. The core of everything, you know, is exactly the same. One of the things that younger test groups had originally said was it's difficult to hit up the numbers on the dice because they're all used to how many sixes did you roll? Three. Boom. Okay. You got it. Like, you know, but you're adding up all the numbers on the thing. But I've noticed when I run the games at conventions, because I run charity games for the Jane Goodall Institute, because we donate the money to Helping Apes, you see them stumbling on it in the first like 20 minutes. And then after that, they're math whizzes. You know, it's just your brain has not been trained to think this way in modern gaming. It's all, you know?
Yeah. I grew up with I played a ton of Champions in high school. And I don't know if you ever played Champions. It was all, you know, adding up the, you know, 20 D6s for stun and figuring out the body and all that. So just to roll things back a bit.
Sure.
One of the things I thought about is with folks at our youthful age, we grew up with Planet of the Apes, and it's something that, you know, has had a bit of a revival in the movies and everything else. But, you know, when you first saw a Planet of the Apes movie, what drew you in and made you that kind of, you know, rest in your brain for the rest of your life? What struck you?
It's so, Planet of the Apes is like Star Trek in that if you look at it and you're a kid, you're like, oh, laser guns and beaming me up and or monkeys on horseback. Like, what? Spaceships and monkeys and but then if you're as you get older, you say, wait a minute, this is social commentary, what's going on here. They're talking about with things that have happened in the real world, and they're doing it this way so they can get the message across without sounding preachy. And it's, I had actually with apes, like, I guess probably the time I was 15, I sort of forgot about apes for like maybe 10 years. And it was when I was in college, I saw the movies were out on videotape again. And I was like, actually, I remember what it was. It was a holiday, and there was a marathon on one of the channels. TV, what is it? The movie channel? Yeah, I think this was. But regardless, and there was a movie that I was like, I came downstairs with my girlfriend. We were at my parents' house, you know, college, going home for the weekend type thing. I came downstairs, my girlfriend is watching it on TV, and I'm like, what the heck? She's like, it's one of the influencers. I was like, no, it's, I said, couldn't be. It must be from the TV series because I didn't recognize anything. Mm. And it was Battle, because when I was a kid on the ABC afternoon movie, Battle was too new. They didn't have it in the rotation.
Okay.
So I was, what the hell is this movie and why does it exist? You know? So that, and then I saw the videotapes, and that's when I got back into it and everything. And I realized a bunch of stuff from those ABC movies when I was a kid. There's a lot of discrepancies between the films, because back then nobody had VCRs when they were coming to theaters. So they're like, people are not going to remember. Who cares? They didn't pay attention to continuity stuff. And I realized that a bunch of stuff that I thought happened, I made up to fill in the gaps. Like, in Beneath Planet Apes, at the end of the first movie, Zaius arrests Cornelius, and they're going to face trial for heresy. And then in the next movie, they're best buds, and suddenly Cornelius and Zero are not fiancés, they're married, and like all these things. And I was like, as a kid, I remember thinking, well, clearly there must be a movie in between here that they just didn't have on TV, right? You know? And it's like, no, actually, I made up all this stuff. I mean, it made sense. And I used that as the basis of my two novels.
What happened? You filled in the gaps.
Yeah. It's frustrating sometimes because I look at some of the Planet Apes groups and it's like people are asking these questions like, well, what about this, huh? And I'm like, it's in my book, but I really don't want to just say, well, you should read my book. You should read my book.
you don't want to be that guy.
Yeah, no, it's like, it's hard. I have to scroll by and it's like, I can't let them all wonder. But I have noticed that inevitably somebody's like, hey guys, this novel answered those questions. Somebody else comes in and deals it. So, it's just, I want everybody to know, hey, that, you know, these questions have been answered. Maybe not to your liking, but they were answered at least, you know?
Yeah.
That's the toughest thing with fandoms that are our age. When I first wrote Conspiracy, I was like, well, I officially wrote an official novel. So this is it, guys. Right. And they're like, who the hell are you to tell me what happened that makes to make that work? You weren't around 40 years ago to do that. You were a kid. And, you know, so it's like, okay, well, to get over this, I hooked into certain things moving forward with Alien. It's like I created something that I called Barroom Ken. And it's like any alien story you've ever seen or read has happened in one way or another, even if it contradicts Ken. Just the version you read or the movie you saw that you don't like, if you hate Prometheus or whatever, whatever you want. Okay. It's that version of the story was overheard by someone who was drunk in a bar, who was telling a story his cousin told him. And that's the barroom canon. Okay. So it's up to you at your table to figure out what really happened. And for Apes, I called it campfire canon. Apes has a built-in get around for any of this because, in the third and fifth movie, they talk about how time is a highway with an infinite number of lanes. If you change your lane, you change your destiny. Hmm. So all that stuff, anything could have happened in any of these planet loops in a different lane of time.
Well, isn't it kind of the original movie kind of lends itself, right? Isn't it all like not the original one movie? But I'm just trying to remember. It's been so long. Like, it's kind of a loop, right? The end is them blowing up the bomb and they get on the shuttle and they go and they end up right back in history. And then they're going to become the parents of, right? So there's this whole kind of idea already built in that there's this infinite loop of this story.
And by going back in time, they created a new line because the way I look at it is that if all the astronauts who launched into the future, you know, got stuck in the future, wanted planes, they're all shocked when they get there, right? Koniecznik Zero landed in 73, but it's 1980, and the guys launching from 1980 don't know about this because they all came from the original lane A, okay? And when Koniecznik Zero went back in time, they created lane B. So it creates endless different versions of things, even though everybody started off in the same timeline.
From a science fiction perspective, the time and alternate dimensions, I think there are things that we keep coming back to as people as a tool for explaining things. You've seen that. You've seen it, of course, in Marvel and many other franchises out there too. I wonder why that is. You have any thoughts on why we kind of keep coming back to like time loops and alternate dimensions and that sort of thing?
Part of it is a fantasy thing that our life is so terrible sometimes that we hope that somewhere out there, another version of us is having a great time. You know, it's, when everything goes bad, everyone says we're living in their own timeline, you know?
Yeah.
So
this is the worst timeline.
This is the dumbest timeline.
I mean, right? I don't really know if it's the worst one. I bet you I can find you a worse one. I wonder if Planet of the Apes is the original multiverse. Was there anything with that before Planet of the Apes?
I mean, let's see.
Is it the OG?
Star Trek, original Star Trek, didn't they had the alternate Federation, right? Were they, yeah, right? But I don't remember the dates for those two, like right. the original.
When did Planet of the Apes come out, and when did the original, that Star Trek come out? So
it's around the same time. Star Trek came out
a year before Apes was released, but they were in co-development. I wonder if this ties, this is me not knowing my science on this, or at least my history. I wonder if this ties into when theories about this first started.
Maybe. Was, you know, was maybe there was like a Carl Sagan thing that came out around that time or something? He's
later, right? He's later. Sagan was 70. Well, he would have started in the 60s, right? I'm trying to remember, I was watching his show in the 70s. Gosh, we're old. I know.
Oh, yeah, I figured this out now. On the hunt.
Yeah, okay. No, it started 100 years before that.
Oh, okay.
It was formulated into physics in 1957. Oh. That was the many worlds interpretation.
Okay.
So it was brewing for like 10 years before everybody started playing with it.
So with Planet of the Apes, I think you mentioned earlier that it's probably one of the reasons why it hung on and made its way, you know, it did its own loop into more modern cinema, is the social commentary. When you're making characters or you're the GM designing a campaign and plan, is that social commentary or those avenues baked into the game to, you know, strings that you can pull on when you're writing this game?
Yeah. So we have, there's two modes of play. Oh my gosh, the actual name of the one with the commentary is blanking on me, but the one that's not the commentary is called Monkeys on Horseback Mode. And if you're looking for more like the Tim Burton experience, that's the mode you want to play. Okay. You know, the other thing is it's, we tell, you know, here's a list of things that can be dealt with in Planet of the Apes. And, one of the things that people were concerned about before we came out with the game, and so we saw what was first announced, it's like, oh, so this is a bigoted game because all gorillas are going to be soldiers and all this. And it's like, yes, that is what we saw. But if in the first movie, they talk about how the quota system has been abolished. And actually, Zira has a job an orangutan normally where. And the other doctor is telling her, you've made it, why can't I? So it's the idea in the game is that we don't have a template for an ape, for a gorilla soldier. We have a template for an ape soldier. Okay. Mm. So, and we worked this in there. It's like, you want to be a chimpanzee soldier. You can do it. Now there's going to be all this stuff that's going to story-wise, that's going to be, hurdles for you to overcome that wouldn't be if you were a gorilla soldier, like, you know, because the gorillas are going to pants you. You know, they're gonna, you know, until you prove yourself to them by saving someone's life or something, they're gonna think that you're a joke. Why are you here? You know, so but that creates great role playing opportunities right there too. And you can, without even saying we're gonna deal with racism or anything like that, you're actually working out story ideas that just works for the character, and you don't even realize what you're doing. Just like as a kid, we didn't realize what we were doing, what we were watching. You know. So it there's stuff built in like that. So the adventure that's in the core book, right, is called Hunted on the Planet of the Apes. Okay. And the concept of this adventure is that some wild animal or animals are killing people in this remote province, and you're being sent to get rid of it. And nobody knows exactly what it is, but it may even be human.
Hmm.
Okay. So you're all apes and you're going to hunt a human. Right? So you could be playing it from that point of view, or you could be playing an astronaut, you know, it, in the game. You don't have to just be an ape or just a human or just a mutant. You get all these choices of which way you want to approach it. The core game thing, the easiest thing to do is be like, yes, you're all apes. This is how apes feel about humans. And the thing is, it's disturbing, but also fun. I mean, Alien was the same way, watching people play Alien, seeing how people handle this situation. Because they, if the human talks, they don't even want to hear it. They want it dead. And I'm like, they're just so into the characters. And there was a 12-year-old kid who his dad had brought along for one of the charity games and asked if he could play. And I was like, sure. And the kid was so brutal. And I said, can I see your character sheet? I looked at the character sheet and I called his dad over. I was like, you know what? He's like, yeah, I read it too. He's he's just playing the character. He's not insane. he found this way to play the character with him trying to interrogate somebody, and he just put the human down while everyone was talking to him because he was so offended that he existed. I mean, it's like that's what an ape of that stature would do. And it's interesting to see a character, players just grab stuff like this and run with it. It's like
I was curious.
When he's going to die, but sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was curious. You mentioned this about the different, like you could play classic, like an ape, right? Mm-hmm. The astronaut. There were like the, as I was reading it, I read like kind of like the feral current humans, right?
Yeah.
But then there was like another kind of, I didn't know if this was like the ones from the final one, like the cult, or they were some sort of like alluded to having some sort of mental powers or something. But what I was wondering are these designed to play separately or in this system or sort of in the storytelling world? Is it feasible where you could have a group of players that are made up of a mix of these?
Yeah,
and it still work.
Absolutely. The box set Into the Forbidden Zone has an adventure that sets up you going into the Forbidden Zone for the rest of the campaign, and it's I'm trying not to give away the story, but I'll just cut to this. You have to work together with people that you wouldn't. Because to get out of this alive, and you do, and then you develop into a band in the process.
Very cool.
So, would a gorilla want help from a human? Not necessarily, but if it was the only way to get out of the situation, they might take it and then try to kill a human later. You know. we built things into the pregens for that. That like, for example, the scientist character found out that the retired ape soldier farmer had humans stealing food from his field, but he allowed it because his dad had secretly kept a pet human when it was young, and he loved the human's company. So the scientist finds out about this and was going to basically stay at his farm and record what the humans do, we don't hate humans, we don't understand them when we're starting. So it's sort of like when Cornelius Zero opened to try and figure out what the deal is with Taylor. The opportunity is for that. We originally had that adventure in the core book, and I realized, you know what, this is, you need to understand and play the game just really simply first before you can go into this crazy box that I get. So we moved
right, into right.
You can play two different types of mutants and two different types of humans, and then obviously the three types of apes. The mutants are the ones from the movies and the ones from the animated series. They were very different. The humans, you can play the tribal humans or you can play the astronauts. The tribal humans, you need to be, if you're going to play a group of tribal humans, you're fine. Okay. But if you're going to play the one tribal human or in the group of mixed, there are rules that make this difficult. First of all, you're not allowed to speak at the table. You have to convey what you want to do without words. Okay. when it comes to skills, you and one of the apes could always take, when you're creating your character, sign language. And then you can communicate the sign language to that ape. But if you don't, then it becomes like it's a challenge. It's like we say, don't do this unless you really want the crazy challenge, you know? Because that's what it would be, you know? It would be, if I'm playing your dog, I'm going to talk to you, you know? What are we talking about? The cartoon? Then sure, that's fine. But we tried to think about all that stuff. The mutants have the mental abilities they do, but they also are very, like, physically weak comparatively. Together. So, you know, there's balance on everything. It's no different than if you look at Dungeons & Dragons and it's like, you know, the old school Dungeons & Dragons where a wizard had less hit points than a fighter, you know.
Right.
He had that to make up for. So, yeah, so we want to encourage crazy play from all the anything that anyone wants to do.
Yeah, I really like just the idea of playing in something that's like so you know, different from where we are, but also what one thing that it reminds me of is when you're playing something like Vampire or whatnot, it's like, oh, what, you know, what is it to, where's my personhood or my humanity, and what does it mean to be a person? And I think with Planet of the Apes, if you're playing like a, you know, a feral human and or some of these other things, it's like, you know, where you could have some pretty compelling role play depending on what your group was like. I think you could tell some pretty cool stories with that kind of baked into the system. Yeah. Anyways, so I'm sure that was you know, that's really part of the vibe of the story. So that had to be something you were thinking about when you were writing this.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's like I shopped Alien around for 18 months before Free League. I got in contact with someone who knew Free League, and I didn't know Free League at all. And I was like, I can't find a company who wants to pick this up. Can you? And because for 18 months I shopped it around, and everyone was like, oh, it's a one note thing. Nobody's going to, I was like, no, it's this huge universe. And then the same thing happened with Planet of the Apes. It's like, the story's been told. It's like, no, there's tons of stuff here, guys. There really is tons of stuff. And even working with Fox, they were like, you sure you don't want the license for the new, it's 20th Century Studios now, you sure you don't want the license for the new Planet of the Apes stuff? And I said, no. And there's multiple reasons why. It's like, first of all, it is grounded in reality so much that it doesn't have these bizarro sci-fi elements that the classic stuff does. There's no time travel. There's no mutants. There's no weird beasts in the Forbidden Zone. There's none of that stuff. And that's all fertile territory for role-playing games right there, you know? And on top of that, it's like working with an active license can be a disaster. I've heard stories of, you know, a comic book that's mostly done, the first two issues are out, and then they change something on set, and so the third and fourth issues have to be thrown out, and they have to rewrite completely new things because you can't use that character anymore, and you can't just change their name, and, well, it's not worth it, you know?
Well, even with Alien Evolved, this was delayed a little bit because the you know, movie came out, and they decided to wait a little bit so they can incorporate some of the technology, the ships and weapons and things like that from the new movie into the book. So yeah, that's active license. I could see that does add another layer of complexity there. So how many books and materials do you have available for Planet of the Apes right now?
We have the core rule book, which is 308 pages of big. And it has everything in it for you to understand the basis of ape society and basically make Planet of the Apes however you want, right? So there's enough in there that you could recreate stuff you see in the movies and stuff, or you could take it wherever you want. The next book is the ANSA Files, which is a source book for the first five movies, that book gives you all the hardcore stuff from the movies in it. It's divided up into five sections, one for each film. Well, actually, it's not true. One for each time period, so it's four sections. There is five because we added one. All right, let me start that over. You don't have to edit or anything. Let's just,
okay.
All right. this is my ADHD talking. Okay. There's different time periods in the book that you can play. Okay. I had this crazy idea that I thought for sure we were going to shut down, but I ran with it, and it was getting so cool. I decided, you know what? If they shut this down, we'll just take the stuff and make it a different game. But there's a huge section on just playing the Cold War astronaut scenario, like before, like in the 1960s. I set it up in a way so that if you don't show anybody what they're playing, like if you give them character sheets that don't have the names on it and stuff like that, you could actually run this campaign, which builds up to you taking this launch into space, and then you could have your people land on the Planet of the Apes. So, you know, it's, I did a lot of flashback stuff in the second novel of The Death of the Planet of the Apes, which is called, showing why Taylor was such a cynical bastard, everything that he'd gone through in his past, that led up to this. And I got wound up dealing with ANSA, the space program, a lot in there. And I approached it that NASA is the civilian space program, but ANSA is the military. So all the X vehicles that we were testing in the 50s and 60s, that stuff was, Taylor was one of the test pilots for that. I won't get into details of all the crazy stuff that happened to him, but like they had previously stated he was in World War II and that he was in the Korean War. And so I had him go through all this stuff, which shows this is why he lost faith in him and why he's the person he is, who winds up actually blowing up the world. Spoiler alert, if you haven't seen the movie from 1970. So I was like, wow, there's all those X planes we could have stats for and all this cool stuff. And so, yes, I put it all together and I'm like, man, I really hope they approve this because this is like, this is off the rails a little bit here, you know? there's not a single ape in any of this. they loved it. So I was very happy with that. You can play the time period of escape when Cornelius and Zero go back in time to 73. There's options and stuff built into there is that maybe it's not Cornelius and Zero who go back into this timeline. Maybe you and a scouting mission of apes for who have this ship do this for some other reason. And, you know, you could take this in another crazy tangent completely. There's the conquest of the Planet of the Apes time period, which is when apes were servants to humans. Had a lot of fun with that because there was so many crazy things that they've come up with that if you look at the timeline, all works together. Like on the TV show, one of the characters was talking about how they had, I can't remember what they call them, but it was like disposable clothes. Like you put them on and then when you're done, you just wash them down the drain. And like there was all this other weird stuff that they mentioned that they had back and it's the same time period. So we worked it all into that and it's just a lot of fun. And then there's the Battle of Planet of the Apes era, which is, you know, right after the bombs have gone off and everybody's struggling. So, and then of course the ones from the first two movies. So it gives you details on every one of those periods. It's 312 book, a page book. So much beautiful art in there. We've got, one of the artists did these amazing, exploded views of the ship from, Liberty One, the ship from the first movie, and also the big Gemini capsule from the animated series. It's funny because when I watched the animated series as a kid, I was like, that's Gemini, it's huge, right? It's ridiculously huge. And then I found out that I don't know if they intended that or they just didn't know scale when they put it in the animated series, but there was something called the big Gemini that was planned that was supposed to carry like 30 something astronauts into space that they were working.
Oh, wow.
And there's a prototype somewhere on display in some museum. But I was like, wow, this is a thing. Great. That's what that was. it's a lot of detailed fun stuff. And then, so that's three. No, I'm sorry. That's two books. And then we've got the box set, which is the Into the Forbidden Zone. And it is a campaign set in the Forbidden Zone with an inciting adventure that gets you there. It has a GM screen, it has dice, it has encounter cards, it has a ton of stuff, and it has all these maps. And we have coming out in September, I think, it's called Alone on the Planet of the Apes. It's the solo playbook.
Okay.
I was going to ask you about that because there are some of these scenarios and these timelines really, to me, lend themselves to either solo or one or two people. Like if you're the two chimpanzees that go back in time, you could really see two, you know, one person, you know, taking turns GMing. And then of course, if you're the astronaut, you know, that could be a very solo experience. Yeah. Right. So that's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, we were approaching it as like, okay, well, you know, there were four astronauts on that ship. One accident, one died before they landed, and then two of them were killed later. So they started out as a party of four, you know? So, But with the solo book, it's like, I have this weird relationship with solo play. It's like, I've never been able to make it make sense for myself. And then the publisher wants to do the solo play thing. And I was like, my writing partner, he loves this stuff and he's totally into it. So I was like, all right, well, you'll take care of the little stuff on this, right? And I was just like, I just don't get it. I really don't get it. Because it's like, All right, I go up to the door, and who's there? I wrote, oh, I guess it's a cop, okay? And I tell the cop, how are you? Oh, he's angry at me. Like, I don't get it, right? But I realized while we were working on it that this thing is an amazing tool for making adventures as a GM for others to play as well. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're able to approach it both ways now. This is a great book, but it's still something boring about it, right? Is what I'm thinking when I'm working on it. I was like, I'm not feeling this. It's so many tables and stuff like that. What can I possibly do? And like 4 hours before we were supposed to turn in the final draft, it hit me. And so there was no sleep that night. and I was like, well, I started off hating this. So, and I don't anymore, but what if the book is written? What if solo play is a human invention and the book is written by an ape who despises solo play? So I was able to put that voice into everything. And the editor was like, I can't stop laughing reading this thing. This is amazing. So when you open up the book, the first thing it says in big red letters, do not read this book. And it's a letter from the guy telling you how it's blasphemous and you shouldn't read it. And it was so much fun. I'm so happy with that book now. And I hated it so much when we started. I was like, this is what happens when publishers want to do things and they don't talk to the creatives first. Blah, 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 blah. No, this is an awesome book.
So if I don't know if you listen to podcasts, but I'm actually pretty iffy on solo play myself because I play these games to play with friends. That's kind of like the point for me. Right. But there's this podcast that is done so well. It's called Tale of the Manticore. Okay. It's a fantasy kind of old school type game. And sometimes they'll have like a guest voice on, but it's really just this one guy and he's the GM and the player. But Tale of the Manticore, really, really good. Anybody who's listening to this and has heard of them knows what I'm talking about. It's an enjoyable experience and I think it'll help you get it.
So, I think that would be really actually fun to listen to, like more fun than it is to play it. It's like what he's doing is performance art, that point, right?
Yeah.
Really, that's amazing.
You still, and especially the way he does it, right? Because it's not like it's not an actual play, but it is. But it's not. So he really plays the game, but that's not what he records. So he has. It's a very different format. Like he does all the dice rolls. It's all very random. He's truly playing the game, but what he presents is a narrative.
Okay, so he builds
into narrative. So there's the reason it's done so well, it's a compelling story, but it is backed by actual play. So it's not an audio drama, but it tends to feel like one when you're listening.
Even though he's still going through all the tables and interpreting them and things like that. So it's really I haven't heard anything else like it. So anyway,
yeah, and I'm not skeptical. I know that actual solo play has become very popular. I'm the same way as Nathan. It's a very social experience for me. But I know I used to like choose your own adventure books. Yeah. So, I mean,
that's a different thing, though. It's like I love that. So I wrote two Choose Your Own Adventure graphic novels that came out from Press in the 3 years, somewhere in those 3 years, the last book, they were adaptations of the original books into graphic novel form because they had never been comics before, which was a fun challenge also because so much of that stuff that you're inside the character's head and you can't, that doesn't work in comics. You have to find a way to translate this into action and dialogue. And there was like, one of them was called Eighth Grade Witch and the other one was called Journey Under the Sea, right? Eighth Grade Witch, when she's trying to solve the problem that's going on, she has to go to the school library and use this giant computer that takes forever to get on the internet, right? In the original book, right? She's carrying around this massive, like, flashlight you could club someone over the head with. And she's got a walkie-talkie and all this stuff. And I was like, so she has her cell phone. Next.
Right.
We had to adapt it because it's for kids, you know? We needed to adapt it for something that they were like, what is this nonsense? but that's those choices that it's branching, but it's still linear. It's the branches are linear. It's not just rolling the dice because it just takes me so out of it. Like you put me in a situation, if we're gaming, right? And you're the game master and you say, okay, you come to this thing, do you going to jump or are you going to go back the way you came? You're telling me the same thing that the book is telling me when I'm reading the Choose Your Own Adventure book, you know? And I make that choice. But with the die roll thing, it's just like, there's no reading. It's just keep rolling. But like I said, I've found uses for it for my own personal stuff now, as because it's, I don't know, to do this adventure, I need an adventure real quick. Boom, 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 boom. Wow, I've got an awesome adventure, you know? I know that when they meet the cop, he's going to be pissy no matter what they say, because I already rolled that, you know? And then that's a challenge for them to not be, to figure out how to make him not angry, as opposed to, you know, accidentally making him angry when we get there. You know, it changes the way to look at things, and it's a good app for that. And we had a lot of playtesting with the solo stuff. We had a lot of positive responses, so that works on that level, works on this level, and it's a funny read now.
Is Magnetic Press going to be at Gen Con this year, or?
They are not, but I am. I will be there at the Lurker's Loot. Lurking Fears is a company that basically they run. Companies are like, hey, we want 20 tables playing Call of Cthulhu at this convention. They run all that stuff. And they started a store to sell the games that they run. And I will be there. They have, for this past year, since Magnetic was unable to do conventions this year, they have been the source for getting the Planet Ape stuff at convention.
Okay.
So I will be there with them signing books and running charity games and hopefully winning an award or two for Apes or Alien.
Matt and I are...
yeah, we'll have to see you there.
Oh, yeah, we'll
drink or something. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be great. Just haven't got my plane ticket yet, but we have our media passes.
I haven't either. I need to get one.
I did get my plane ticket also, but I have everything else. Right.
I wasn't sure I was going to fly.
we'll tell you. So we're all old here. Matt almost quit the podcast ticket. The hard way. Yeah. So earlier, very early this year, and we're very lucky to have Matt still here to play games with and chat with. So
I did really well on my death saves.
Was this user error, or were you just in the wrong place at the wrong time, or
not long-term life choice?
Long-term, long-term life choices. User errors.
Yeah, long-term user errors.
Well, I'm glad you're here.
I am glad to be here too.
Otherwise, I'd just be talking to this guy, and you know.
Yeah, I know. No, nobody was. Nobody wants to start to me. I'm like, I'm a dumbass. So it's a good transition to Alien. Matt and I and the rest of our gang have played more Alien in the past 5 years than any other system. And this is what we talked to you a lot about last time. You were the setting writer for the whole entire Alien franchise. And as we mentioned, you know, there's two of them now too. So when it comes time to vote for awards for UK Gaming Expo and the Innies, keep it in your thoughts there. I mentioned this earlier too, but I ran this adventure, Heart of Darkness, this whole box set for my home group. And
I'd love to hear about how that went, because I don't know what happened, but it seems like Heart of Darkness is the one that got forgotten in the shuffle. Because everybody talks about everything around it, and it's like they like, oh yeah, I didn't get that. I don't know what happened with promotion wise or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. So we started with Chariot of the Gods, and we did Destroyer Worlds, and mm-hmm. I wanted to finish it. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what I loved about it. I loved the other aliens and other bad guys in there that were pretty compelling and felt very dangerous and threatening. and gross, extremely, extremely gross. Everybody loved Adrian. I was the game mommy, and I introduced Adrian right away, and Adrian stuck with the party until the bitter end. So
people know Adrian is my cat, and yeah. He's in the game. The first player, I don't know if you use this part, but either the GM uses him or the first player who dies gets to pick him up and play him if you want, but the cat's agendas will get everybody else killed. So I mean,
there were several people that wanted to, but nobody died during the main gameplay. I think towards the end there, I think everybody kicked the bucket, but they lost so many limbs. There's so many limbs from that one particular type of xenomorph. I think one person was missing an arm and a leg.
I mean, that's not something we should be laughing about. But
still, I had fun. But no, so it was really good for those things. The backgrounds of the folks were pretty good. There's a lot of I like inter-party conflict. I'm weird like that. So there's lots of areas for backstabbing and betrayal, and so that played out as you would expect. And there's a lot of tense moments. And I think my wife threw something at me at one point, but it's all good. We're still married. the hardest
never part GM your wife. Right.
Yeah. The hardest part for me running it was really the maps, because there's so many levels, and right. How you get from level to level was not always super clear to me. And of course, with the old eyes and the light green on dark green maps, right. It's hard to see where the ladders were versus the central shaft. And so moving around, that was a little tough for me. And it's not unique to this adventure. The other cinematic adventures, one thing that was different was there are the events, and then there are the encounters in actual levels or rooms. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of kind of flipping back and forth. First act events, second act events, third act events, and which floor they're on, and kind of. So I kind of had to really plan ahead, and you know, with the characters being able to be so mobile, I really couldn't, you know, plan for everything. So there's a lot of flipping back and forth, but satisfying.
What's up? Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. But I'm curious about that. Did you have the same issue with Destroyer and Chariot?
Yeah,
because I think it's just like I mean, I knew one of the things that they've done with the second edition is they've tried also like information is given in better places now from what I've seen. So you know, these are things that they've addressed. I personally really love the green on green maps.
It's beautiful.
I mean, I designed those maps. Like,
okay,
I did not. The finished graphic design version is somebody basically going over everything I did and redoing it. But like, I drew out the levels and everything, and I marked. There's an elevator here. There's a ladder here. Whatever, you know. So I know that there's tiny. It's very tiny in certain places and stuff. And we are old and we have old eyes. But that, you know, so that's not something I did, and I understand. The issues that people have had with the colors. So it's a shame because the colors are not like that on the map anymore. But at the same time, you do have to be concerned about, can we play it like this or not?
Yeah, it's one of those, it's really even the layout in the book too is gone for white pages instead of black. I like the black pages. Mm-hmm. So it's a very, very
cool of people who were asking for white pages. Like I was like, well, why do you want white pages? That's what people wanted, and that's why it's done that way.
Yeah. So I get it. I don't I I know why they did it. I get it. But still the art is fantastic in Heart of Darkness and in the new books too. Like this new cover is like fabulous. I just love this. Mm-hmm. For writing the setting for Alien, any particular challenges that stood out to you or things that you particularly enjoyed about writing the setting?
I don't know what it is about Alien. Because my number one fandom has never been Alien, right? I'm a huge fan of Alien, huge fan of Planet Ace, but it's always Star Wars and Star Trek. But there's something about like the way the universe ties together and the darkness of it and everything like that that really speaks to me, I guess. All of it was enjoyable. The other aliens, so to speak, that are in Heart of Darkness, they tie into the stuff with the protomorphs from the divisive prequels. And all that stuff is like, it's stuff that was never said, but it's kind of hinted at in a lot of ways in all these different sources. Why do the engineers hate humanity? Well, what if this is what happens to humanity when they, when they're introduced to this stuff, the black goo, and this is the thing that they're afraid of, and maybe this thing is responsible for ruining the engineer's empire, and all these questions. The trick is to give enough that it's, is this what happened? But we don't say this is what happened. It's one of the things I think is interesting about everybody who gets upset about the engineers being only 9 feet tall instead of 20 feet tall, and it wasn't a helmet in the first movie; it was a head. And da, 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 da. Well, I mean, here's something: what if the engineers actually learned what they know from that other race and basically took their technology? Maybe they killed them and took over. It's like and if you look at some of the stuff that kind of alludes to that, if you look at the concept art for Covenant, because there was some like there were 20-foot bodies, that looked like they did in the first movie. So there's all these different things that it's like, well, is it this or is it that? And the problem with that, most people have a Prometheus. Is that it didn't answer any of the questions, right? And that I think that's where it went slightly wrong, because the trick is to answer these questions, which make you say, well, wait a minute, about the next thing, right? So that we feel like we learned something, but wait a minute, is that right? Because what about this? Then you roll credits. You know what I'm saying? It's you don't just be like, I don't know, roll credits.
Yeah, for horror and for mystery, and that you really want to, you want there to be, to continue, have more,
breadcrumbs, more questions. Right?
Yeah.
It's in the Colonial Marine source book, I kind of answered the Octurn question. They mentioned the Octurns, right?
Yeah.
Either they're another race that the engineers seeded, so they have human-like DNA, right? They're slightly different. And it's so funny, because people who hate one or the other always notice the one they hate and not the one that they don't in there. But it's also indicated that hundreds of years ago, a colony ship went missing in this era and may have crashed somewhere in the system. And these people may have genetically, like with science, adapted themselves to survive properly on this world. So they could just be humans. Like, the people who hate the idea that they're humans and wanted to be aliens don't seem to notice that I said that they could be that also. But because we don't know, it's better to be, have you do it, figure it out on your table. I think my favorite thing that's happened in regards to the alien stuff is Alien Romulus. Like, I have some issues with the movie, most of which I think were studio choices, not the director's choice. I on Reddit, I saw when you're sitting there watching the movie, the stuff that takes place on the planet, did anyone else feel like they were playing a Gaska campaign? And Like, it feels a lot like the stuff that I was creating for Destroyer Worlds and stuff like that. And then the director said in an interview that he, because Alien has been controversial on the movies, you know, of the past, you know, I don't know, 20 years, he wanted to look at what were the most popular non-movie Alien things that were. And it was Alex White's novel, The Cold Forge. Sorry about that. The video game Alien Isolation.
Right.
And the Alien role-playing game, specifically Chariot of the Gods. And I don't know, have you seen Romulus?
Yeah.
Well, the syringes in Romulus are the same ones from Chariot of the Gods.
Okay.
I'm sitting there in the theater watching this, and I've got friends on the other side, and I see their heads slowly turn towards me. You know, I don't get any money for that. I don't get any acknowledgement for that. I created it into the franchise, and now it's part of the franchise. And I knew that was everything I do for it. That's what it is. And I'm fine. But it's nice to see that the director thought that was really cool. I mean, the syringes have, this thing is either going to cure you or turn you into a monster.
Right.
That's the whole thing. Do I take the syringe when I'm in the game? Right. And that's literally what happens in the movie. So it's nice to see it having an effect on the franchise as a whole.
That's pretty cool.
It's not like I did this thing and people are like, that's nice, and they ignored it. You know, it's becoming part of the canon. And it's nice to feel that I contributed to something that I loved, you know?
Yeah, and these are things that stick around, you know, long after we're all gone, too, because these franchises have really caught a hold into not just the American psyche, but really a, you know, Alien is pretty global phenomenon. So that's pretty fucking cool. I can't wait to play more Alien. Matt and I were just talking about that before we got on. I do have the next Rapture Protocol game not too far away from here. Before we wrap up here, I do want to touch on some of the other things you've done. You've come out with a Terminator RPG and Carbon Gray. I know Carbon Gray uses that Western Games system also, right? Does Terminator too? Is that a separate?
No, Terminator was not Magnetic Press. Terminator, I wrote all the lore for the core book, the campaign book, and for the T2 book. The game didn't have really great distribution. It didn't quite break it to the United States very well. So I don't know what's going on with it right now, but I love Terminator, and it was great figuring out that nonsense, especially and I say nonsense because the way Terminator license works, it's a different license for each movie.
Oh, okay.
Because the rights are split all over the place for Terminator. Okay.
Wow.
So when we did the first book, the challenge was, okay, you can use all first movie stuff, like including the comics and everything like that, right? But you can't mention anything from T2, but we're probably getting the T2 license.
Oh my gosh.
So I have to not contradict T2, but not specific. And that was really a challenge. Okay. And then they did get the T2 license, and we were able to basically finish the sentences that I started in that with the second one. So how do you say these things without breaking everything? So it was interesting.
Yeah, you're playing in somebody else's sandbox, right? Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that you're working on that you want to let us know about? Anything?
I have some big stuff that I'm working on right now that I can't talk about. Uh-huh. Some of which I believe is going to be announced the third week of June.
Okay, not too far.
Yeah. One thing that we forgot to mention about Planet of the Apes is that we did a detailed line of miniatures as well.
I'm looking at them. They're right over on my other screen over here. There's do you know who designed those or who made those?
Oh my gosh, you're asking me this question. Hold on a second. I feel terrible that you're asking me this, and I don't know the answer right off the top of my head. One second.
Yeah, but they look really good. There's quite a few sets of them. It looks like some classic characters in there too.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I knew it was David Arborez, and Daniel Fernandez. They're the sculptors. They sculpted everything for us on Carbon Gray as well.
Okay. I was wondering, because I was just looking at the Carbon Gray and I was looking at the minis on that, and I was like, hey, those look a lot. I was trying to see if they had identified the...
Great guys. I do everything I can to make sure that their job is as easy as possible. So with Planet of the Apes, like for Alien, for Terminator, I wrote stuff, right? But for Planet of the Apes, for Carbon Gray, I was creative director. I was art director. I even with the miniatures, I helped them realize them. It was everything for several years of my life, which is why I'm so gray now. Because it was a lot of work, and I'm so happy with the results. Like even the graphic design, my friend who did the graphic design on Carbon Gray fell ill while we were already on Apes, so I finished it. And in the end, I did over 80% of the graphic design. Even the graphic design on that, so much learned from what we did on Carbon Gray, because Carbon Gray is sort of like the first Alien book, and I didn't do the graphic design on the first Alien book, but where things sort of flow throughout with the text, right? And so people who are having trouble finding things, like people were complaining about on Alien before. And it was an issue on Alien. I think I loved the way everything looked, but it's like, wait, I can't find this rule, you know? So, you know, the second edition takes care of all that part. So. But regardless of that, I made sure that in Apes, like, if it's a rule, it's going to be this blue box. And so you'll go, and there was a blue box and there was a monkey head. Oh, there it is. Like you can remember to train your brain to figure out where that is, you know? I have a guy who tears everything apart, and he tore Carbon Gray to shreds when I showed it to him. And I showed him to me, like, I can't find anything wrong with it. I was like, thank you. I'm sure there's things wrong with it, but at least user friendliness, it wasn't. But the reason I brought up the minis is because I wanted to actually, this thing, which is going to fall off my lap in a second, talk about the dice tower.
Oh.
That's awesome. Yeah.
So yeah. We put the dice in the back of her head and they roll out the front.
Yeah. That's awesome.
That's beautiful.
So I had wanted to do this as a set piece, I guess, for the minis. Like, publisher was like, well, it's got to be small. You can't be as big as you want it to be because it doesn't make any sense. And I'm like, well, if you're going to do it small, we should just kill it. Like, it doesn't make any sense to have a tiny, like, you know, little Statue of Liberty. And then he said, what if it's a dice tower? And I was blown away by this. I was like, the publisher, better idea than creatives. Like,
ring the bell.
So it's like, we talked to the sculptor. The sculptor was like, well, I'm going to have to make it bigger to accommodate the dice thing. Yeah. And so I got it to be this, it wound up being the size. We solved the problem with the size. It ships in the box like this.
Okay.
And this easily plugs in. And I wouldn't even glue it because this way you can dismantle it for.
Yeah.
I'm so happy with this thing. Makes me
you want the GM wants that sitting on the table and right in front of him.
Exactly.
Sure. And I think it's a pretty good price. It's $50, I think. And that's pretty good for something that size, you know. Some of the Star Wars minis get super expensive. So
if it's Star Wars, you could charge $100 for it.
Well, the license also costs a fortune for Star Wars. So.
Right. You'd make a nickel, but Drew, if I can call you that,
of course.
Thank you so much for coming. Let's not make it 3 years before the next time.
Sure.
But hopefully we can catch up at Gen Con. I'll reach out. Matt, any final thoughts? No, any thoughts?
Thanks a lot. It was, I remember last time it was a real education on franchise management. Like it was not what we expected. And so usually like when we get these interviews, again, learn a lot more than just about the game. So I appreciate it. It's good. Yeah. It's great insight.
Cool.
Yeah, guys, for our audience enjoys it. But thanks so much, everybody. Thanks for watching. Yeah. Thanks again, Drew.
And my social media, Andrew Gaska on Facebook. That's probably the best way to reach me right now. I always answer questions. If fans have questions, sometimes it takes me a few weeks because I'm on a deadline, but I will answer your question. Don't feel like you can't reach out to me. I also haven't been in the Alien group much lately, but that's not on purpose. But the Planet of the Apes fan group also. Alien by Free League is the Facebook group for Alien.
Right.
Yep. Alien RPG by Free League, right? And then the fans of the role-playing game of the Planet of the Apes is the Apes one. I will jump in. You tag me. I will answer questions.
Okay. I will include those links in the description for the video, and as well as links to Magnetic Press and your other books. You're quite prolific.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks again, and have a great night.